Welcome to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today I'm joined by Suzanne Anderson. Suzanne is the creator of The Way of the Mysterious Woman, which we're going to be exploring today. Suzanne has worked in the field of transformational leadership development. She's been an executive coach and a motivational speaker working with Fortune 500 executives in North America and Europe over the past 30 years. And in our podcast today, we're going to be exploring the times we find ourselves in, how these are initiatory times. We're going to be exploring the divine feminine and the divine masculine. And we'll dive into the mysterious way, how it applies to leadership development, how many women are feeling the limitations of an outdated paradigm of leadership. We'll talk about the mysterious leadership pathway. And I particularly enjoyed exploring the mysterious sequence. So lots to enjoy in this podcast. If you want to stay in the loop about things that Coaches Rising create, including our acclaimed training programs for coaches, you can head to coachesrising.com and put your name in the sign-up box you find there. And with that all being said, let's dive into the podcast. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. Yeah, Suzanne, it's great to have you with us on the podcast. And yeah, we're just checking in a little bit there. It makes me even more excited to explain or to unpack your work and what you're up to in the world. So how are you, first of all?
Thank you. I'm well. I'm West Coast, USA. So I got up super early this morning because I like to do a few hours of practices before I'm actually like in this kind of a conversation. So I feel ready, and I'm we're into the spring is just opening here. So it's this beautiful, I did a run this morning and everything is just opening. So I feel very open and excited for our conversation.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. Well, actually, I wanted to begin by reading something from your website and asking if you could just expand on that to begin with. And you could just tell us in the answer a little bit about what you're up to in the world, in a sense. But what you wrote was, women are feeling the evolutionary pressure to grow, to come forward as leaders, and to create the change that's needed. We've spent the last half century breaking into the masculine systems and structures, and now we're at a major turning point, a rite of passage that's calling us to awaken and weave together all of our deep feminine wisdom, love, and power with our masculine strengths in the effort to create a better existence for everyone. And that's a really evocative statement and spoke to me. I wonder if you could just say a bit more about what you mean by that and what this major turning point is.
Well, thank you for reading that. I think that's on my website. So that's so what I would, the way I would hold, the way I do hold these times is that they are initiatory. This is, we can, I think I wrote this before all that went on that we're in the midst of right now globally, but for many, many years, I've been talking about the shakeup that was coming, and we're just waiting for what was going to be the form of it, because it was clear that a new wave of consciousness and culture was just starting to rise. And I think it's important. In fact, one of the things I find when I do speaking, or people that have read my first book, is that there's a relief to know that what they're feeling is not somehow I've failed, so for many women, we've worked really hard to show up in environments that have been more the domain of men or the masculine, let's say. And we've excelled in many different ways, and we've built these adult lives, and then something inside starts to kind of rub the wrong way, and there's a feeling of maybe soul erosion, or like I don't have a connection to who I really am, and I don't get the same excitement from the work that I'm doing, and maybe I need to change my marriage, and maybe I shouldn't have had children, or I want to go back to the free me from before. And somehow it's really helpful, I think, for certainly my work has been with women in these last 20 years, but to know that actually you could say those are the signs of evolution's movement, like we're actually being pulled forward to awaken capacities that have never been online before. We're not going back somewhere. This is actually movement forward. So, and in any kind of initiatory kind of times, there is intensity, of course. So that's what I was referring to.
I think that's a really important thing to say, because I've been attuning to that recently, the sense that it can feels like, maybe not like we're going backwards, but like something's wrong, like something's wrong and it needs fixing, things are breaking down. But actually holding that, yeah, during times of transition and initiation, things that were in the dark can surface into the light, to be questioned and challenged or to be let go of. And but that process is by its nature challenging, but it's not like something's wrong and we need to get back to feeling good all of a sudden or something.
Well, I love that you're bringing in let's just get right into the dark aspect. And in fact, we had talked before we started about the picture that's on your back wall, which is a deity of the dark, I believe you said it, a Tibetan deity. And in our work, for many years, we begin, I mean, initially, the research phase of the work, which was about 10 years, we were doing all our programs in person. So we would always begin with a ritual. Where women would go down, we had a black cloth that we'd float up into the air, and women would make the conscious choice to go under that cloth as a symbol of going down and in. And we've worked with the myth, the Persephone myth. Do you know the Persephone myth, the Greek myth?
Yeah, a little, but maybe for everyone, yeah, just take us through that.
Well, I think it's worth just I'll do the fast track of the myth, but basically, it is a Persephone, the innocent maiden, picking the Narcissus flower, which has its own meaning, with her mother and her other sisters. And then Hades, for a long time, had been what god of the underworld, had been watching her and was drawn to her and wanted her as his bride. And he arranged a deal with Zeus that that would happen. And so one day, while she's out picking flowers, he roars up on his chariot and grabs her and takes her into the underworld. And the ground seals over. Demeter doesn't know where she's gone, and she grieves, and the story unfolds. But what happens initially is that Persephone resists this grab into the dark. I will not eat anything. I will not talk to you. I will have none of it. It will not happen. And so basically sort of stays with her arms crossed for a long period of time. And there's a whole story in the upper world of Demeter, who's the goddess of the hearth, and the lands begin to go fallow. And eventually Zeus says, okay, we better stop this, and sends Hermes down to bring her back. And just as she's leaving, Hades says, well, would you like some pomegranate seeds since you're leaving? And she's saying, oh, well, I'm getting out of here anyway. I might as well eat these. And goes up to them and is taken to the upper world. And the first thing her mother says is, did you eat anything in the underworld? And of course, she was, I like the translation where she sort of proudly says, yes, I did. I had the pomegranate seeds. But that then wedded her to the underworld for 6 months of the year. She ultimately, however, she becomes queen of the underworld, falls in love with Hades, and queen of the upper world. And that's the brief trajectory through the myth. But it's so, and there are many descent myths in Inanna, and you probably know many of them. But what I love about that is the recognition that we actually have to go down and in ourselves, like not resist this beautiful, fertile, dark world within. Or even we could say the yin essence, because in yin and yang, the yin and yang symbol, yin is that dark, that beautiful field. And so we always begin our programs with an acknowledgement of no, this work is actually requiring you to go down and in, not as the terrible thing that you have to get out of as soon as possible, but as a place where transformation actually occurs.
I'd like to come back to this on an individual level, because I think this is we're getting right into something really important. I think first, if we could just spend a bit more time as well talking about maybe the collective underworld journey we're being invited into in relationship to, I think many women, and I'm aware, I know I named this in the beginning, like the irony of me being a man talking to you about this and the my you know the what my experience and how I that will color my questions and but I wonder about the if you could say a bit more about this invitation, this turning point. Do you feel that there are many women, as you've named, who are feeling, in a sense, disenchanted with the world of work or leadership, and that they are being invited into this underworld journey? And in a sense, and maybe we can't say this, but what's being let go, what's being invited to be let go of and collectively, and what might be being invited to embrace or bring in?
Right. Well, that's a beautiful question. And I'd say I'm gonna have to I think I need to give a little bit of an arc of my own work, like where the seeds of this came from, because I was a management consultant actually based in Paris. I lived in Europe, and it was a sort of swashbuckling kind of, there weren't very many women in those days in the 90s. Working in the C-suite with executives. And the few women that were there, I thought would be happy to see me. I was there doing leadership work. That was a phase where organizations were having to shift from that, the matrix model and command and control, and starting to open up to new ways of sharing information and empowering others. And emotional intelligence was just beginning to be a thing. And but the women were the most resistant, and it was stunning to me. Like, they, why were you resist? I'm here. I'm a woman. I'm showing you that you can be not only good at what you have learned to do, but open these other skills. I had no concept yet of feminine and masculine. I hadn't, that work hadn't arisen. But I saw their suffering. They worked so hard to get there, and they weren't going to give up that way of being. But then, in the retreats I would run in the bar in the evening, we'd be talking, and then the real suffering would come out, like what was really going on for them. Maybe they were sick, or they were ill, with they'd been had a long-term illness and couldn't talk about it, or in their personal lives or whatever. And I realized there's, or they'd have an insight, and I would think, well, will you bring that into the session tomorrow? And they just couldn't do that. And so a few things happened at that same time in my own life, including my own a certain a spiritual awakening, I would say, to the feminine. All that led to, okay, I've got to do something. No one seems to be tending to this field of women. And so I left the consulting practice, and I opened a private practice, and it was full in just a minute, because there were so many women who were in that position who didn't want to have to leave everything they'd worked so hard for, but they were sort of dying inside. But I felt like I'm like one nanosecond ahead of them. I really didn't understand what was going on. And that sent me back to graduate school and to study basically women's development in clinical psychology, to try to understand what was happening for women here. And what I began to understand, and I definitely understand now, is that we got hardwired, as we do, what fires together wires together, in some of these more masculine ways of being. Really, I would say, from an evolutionary standpoint, good. It was a necessary, maybe even the correct movement forward, but not the final game. And then that was at the expense of some of the deeper feminine connection to some of the deeper feminine essences. And that was the work we did for the 10 years in our university programs, trying to figure out what is feminine and masculine, and what does it mean for women to develop the feminine. And then we decided, okay, this has to just happen with women right now, even though, as we talked beforehand, I do feel these the distinctions we make are very relevant to men as well.
Yeah, totally. We'll get into that. Could you say about some of these feminine traits, the traits that the journey that women go on, in a sense? And maybe you could even share, you said like that you had an awakening to the divine feminine, and I'm wondering if you feel open to sharing some of what that was. Yeah,
Right.
what opened up for you there? Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I will say there are two awakenings, and one I think I should give both to for this. One was, I'd say, the light awakening, and then one was the dark awakener, both which were critical in the work I'm doing in the world. The light one was, I'm in the middle of this world I described in France. It's sort of the peak of my work inside a more masculine spiritual tradition, so more guru-centric. But those words, the worlds were very separate. They didn't, I kind of would stealth spiritual, but very much in my more a corporate consulting mode, coaching mode. And I went to Bali to be with my sister, who was in Java at the time. She came over and joined me, and we were on a week-long kind of retreat and fasting, doing all the things. And at a certain point, about 5 days into this, I was meditating, and I went into a state I'd never been in before, or since, really, to this degree. I mean, this was like, it would, because it was lasted for about 2 days, where I was just in a state of union and bliss, and my ego dissolved. And in that time, when my mind wasn't really operating like it normally does, or my ego certainly wasn't, the question arose to the cells of my being, will you help to midwife the divine feminine on earth? not just actually touch to feel that again. And everything in me said yes. And then when I came out of this state, a couple of days later, my ego started to come back together, and what's my name and where do I live? And I remembered this question, and I was like, holy shit, I don't even know. I know nothing about what that is. I did not know what the divine feminine was. And I had did not come out of a spiritual context that honored the divine feminine. But I knew I had said yes. I knew it was right for it was true. So within a few months, I had left my consulting practice. It was almost like this. It was so clear I had to do this, whatever this was. And then I was on the journey of really finding out what that meant. And I actually early on met, I don't know if you're aware of Robert Moore and Doug Gillette's work, the King Warrior. Yeah. Well, we ended up working together, creating a program, a leadership program, actually using these archetypes. And they brought me, and I would go back and forth from Paris to Chicago. And it was like my world was opening. It was like I am no longer just doing this more conservative work in organizations. I had the private practice with women. I'm trying to understand, which I called soul journey work. Like I'm trying to understand what is happening. And so that unfolded then for, I ended up moving to the United States. And as I mentioned, went back to graduate school and then started doing the 10 years of work, which I think I'd like to share the dark awakening. Can I do
And
that
just
next,
one
John?
before you do, one quick question, because when you describe in Bali is in a very, I've never been, but from what I understand, a very apt, it's a very feminine kind of place, in some
Absolutely.
ways. And what made that awakening experience, which sounds incredible, that like an ac accessing the divine feminine for you? Because, we could hear what you're saying, and it could sound like a consciousness awakening and awakening as awareness or consciousness. What gave it that divine feminine flavor for you?
Well, I would say I felt the presence of later an energy I came to know as Kuan Yin, of this a feminine essence, all I can say. And I had no context for it. Later, that archetypal energy became available to me, and I realized that was the energy. It was like a dissolution into. The best way I can describe it is an embodied union where I had my spiritual practice up to that time was much more awake awareness, was more, I would say, transcendent and not embodied in the same way. So this was a really different direction of for me.
Beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, that's that. We'll come back to that as well, because I think this kind of not transcendent awakening is very apt for our times, what you said, you were going to talk about the dark experience as well.
Right. So that set me on a path of really, I mean, trying to figure things out. Ken Wilber's integral model was key for myself and the co-author of my first book, Susan Cannon, who came together with me. She was doing her PhD in as a futurist, looking at the positive scenarios for the future, and they always included the feminine. I was, as I said, studying how women might develop. What was this evolutionary edge for women? And so we brought the sort of individual and the collective together in our work, made sure to put it in the programs in the university. So this wasn't going to be, somewhere, let's say over there in sort of new age goddess territory, but really measurable work that we could see the difference when people came in and came out and understand things. And after about 10 years of this, we did understand things. We'd mapped this pathway. And it was clear from the very first program, and again, Ken Wilber's The Integral Map was really helpful for us because this wasn't about self-help. This wasn't just helping the self that was. that came into the program. This was urging or encouraging the developmental unfolding. And so how could we do that? What were the conditions that let that developmental wave move? And when we figured that pathway out, then we were ready to publish that. We wrote a book, The Way of the Mysterious Woman, which is the first book, and getting ready to put it out. And just 3 days into 2014, right as it was getting ready to move into the world, and I had this sense of my wings are stretched out, I'm going to bring this work in the world. My husband David took his life, and as I often say, with it, mine as I knew it for sure. And within 6 months, everything in my outer world was gone, just like in those Tibetan painting, the sand paintings where the monks fastidiously put all those grains of sand on a beautiful map and then just wipe it away at the end. That's what happened. And I do feel now and even actually pretty soon into the experience, I felt like this was the invitation, still part of that same invitation that came to me earlier. Like, well, let's just see if you can really live this. And I'm not sure. Do you know the work of Michael Mead and his men's work? Yeah.
Yeah, he's been on the
Well, he.
podcast as well.
Oh, great. Okay. He's a friend of mine. Lived on the island I lived on, and he came over. Pretty. We were actually at the time working on how we were going to do a sort of theatrical embodied experience of the Persephone myth. He and I both love myth. Of course, that's his thing. And he came over the day after David died, and I was of course destroyed. And he said to me, "Now, what you need to remember is that you are Queen Persephone, and you have been called to go deeper into the underworld than you've ever gone before. And this is what you need to do now. And we will stay in the upper world and we will hold space for you. And you need to go." And I remember I just, like something me let go, like, okay, this is the path now. This is the path, and I will walk this with every cell of my being in the way of the mysterious woman, and I will see what happens.
Thank you for sharing that. And I mean, what an incredible gift to have Michael Mead come over, having been in, online in his presence a couple of times, and such a beautiful soul. A st stunning
Absolutely.
invitation that he made
Yeah.
in that moment of deep anguish. And what happened after that? You felt this invitation into the mysterious way. What was that journey like?
Well, it was really, and that's the heart of the second book, You Make Your Path by Walking. It was really that. It was taking the principles of the work that I had been teaching for years and certainly living much more deeply into myself. And this is somebody said to me the other day, they were talking about how difficult it was to be here in the United States right now with everything that's going on and all the anxiety and remarking, well, how is it that you're able to stay so steady, And I realized, well, I've actually already lost everything. I mean, I lost all the outer things that made order in the world the way I knew it. And the steady center held, like something really was there, this, a leaning into something that in some ways for me, I don't want this for anyone else necessarily, but that was the breaking open and breaking open into the world. And extraordinary things happened as I walked that path. as I have been walking that path. That was initially letting everything go, letting the book go, letting I had to, I moved. We had a beautiful, this huge estate on Vashon. It was its own little world of magic, and I certainly had to let that go. And the David's financial business was a mess, which is part of the shame that took him out. So that came crashing down. So it was like I had to use, literally had to use all of the feminine and masculine capacities. In a way that when the stakes were enormous, and decisions that had to be made. And would I use all my ways of knowing? It's one thing to teach a class about intuition and instinct and, following synchronicity, and another thing to make important decisions for my own survival, to certain at the external level, using these ways of being. That was really the invitation.
I feel that that's very prescient for a lot of us right now, that there is a sense of things being taken away, a sense of uncertainty, and yet that, in the midst of that, there's actually a gift, or an invitation. Maybe calling it a gift is, but there's
I
a
never
deep
liked that word,
invitation.
right? Yeah, an offering is the way I like to say it, which we can receive, but there is, like in any rite of passage, there's also a lot. There's a sacrifice. Something has to be laid down at the portal, and so there are things that we are going to have to, we are letting go here, and there's always in an initiation some heat or some fire. This is. I like to think of it like an alchemy. And there in the alchemical process, there is the breaking down. That's absolutely how it goes. But what impacts, what reforms, what comes out of that has to do with the enabling conditions. What is the container? What is our, how are we holding what's happening? And I in the work that I do right now and with women, it is to say, what is it to be a woman on the edge of evolution? Don't expect us to be like, we're not going back to some comfort zone again. No, we're actually bringing something new in. We are giving birth, I feel, to the next level of consciousness, but also capacity, like capacities that haven't been needed before, in that way that the consciousness, as Einstein apparently said, the we can't solve the problems of today with the consciousness that created them yesterday. So that's the evolutionary pull, and we have to be willing to be in that fire. And sometimes people will say, this looks like with the toxic masculine as we see it, certainly here, as the rise of the toxic masculine. I am quite clear, it is not that. This is the last gasp. This is the end of an era. There is no way that, and every time we move from different waves of consciousness and culture, this being, I think, would be the seventh as we hold it. There's always the disruptive energy, and there's always the death throes, of the old pattern. So we have to keep our eyes focused on something else, and it has to do with the feminine. The feminine is rising, and it's how do we integrate that energy in ourselves and heal some, not get rid of the masculine, but heal the shadows of the masculine. So ultimately there can be a union of yin and yang inside ourselves. That's the opportunity.
Could you say more about what some of these qualities are? Being a woman on the edge of evolution, what are some of the qualities that our women are contacting, embodying as they work with you? What is that pathway in a sense? And what are the conditions that allow that journey to take place?
Let me just talk about the conditions first, because I think we have to be in resonant collective fields. So that is one thing. This is not a movement now for the individual. That just is not the way I see it. You know, this is a movement that we need to be resting into that's much larger than my own little self. So where are those resonant collective fields? You know, and being in those, so you start to vibrate at this the frequency of the new wave that's coming in. And that's what our programs do, the programs that you do, programs that many, you know, the communities of practice that we have. So we definitely have to have that. We need practices ourselves. So we need, what are those leadership practices? The container, if you don't have your own container, there's no way you're going to be able to be resilient and, you know, be in your true nature or your stronger full presence, let's say, during the day. There's so many pulls and the pattern is so strong in that way. And then the other thing I'll just add, is a really clear image of the future. This is something that we wrote about in the first book, and it was based on the work of Fred Pollock way back, a social scientist who was studying after the Second World War what happened to communities, towns, and villages that were able to rebuild, and what was the one thing that let that happen. And it always had to do with a small group of people who were able to hold a positive image of the future, even when everything was falling apart. And this was a practice for me when David died. That was one of those things that, you know, that I was right in the middle of. Everything was falling apart. I had nothing that I could count on in the outer world. But what was the image of the future? It's like getting onto that probability path and holding that image of the future, not as a spiritual bypass, but actually as an energetic presence, like connect with your future self. So we do that work with women. But I think we need that right now. We all need that, you know, not losing track of, while we're seeing the death throes of the toxic masculine. And then we have to do the work inside ourselves. I mean, we don't get the talk, the shadow masculine doesn't show up out there without being in here. And this is the work I feel is harder work. And that's the deep work that we do in our programs. It's really, all right, so in what ways have I internalized the patriarchy? In what ways am I operating in the shadow masculine or the shadow feminine? And can I do that work here, close in, which isn't easy? Both my own family of origin work is there, the transgenerational work is there, the cultural work is there.
It's funny because when I hear the word toxic masculinity, I notice something in me kind of contracts a little bit or feels tension. And I wonder about the how do I say this? It's like honoring the masculine, which I hear you doing in everything you're saying, but and also recognizing the shadow masculine, you know, and I want to ask you about what that is. And I wonder, on my own journey, I've just realized how important it is to not make wrong all these different parts of me, some that, in a sense, you know, are like seem quite toxic, maybe. And
Right.
so I just wanted to name that. That maybe some of these qualities in the shadow masculine are actually trying to have, like, maybe even positive intentions in some way, but
Oh,
that
yeah.
they've you know, they're not serving anymore. So I
That's right.
wondered if
That's,
you, yeah.
yeah, I was just going to say that's where it becomes toxic. It's a big, or, and maybe hyper, even hyper masculine is another term that's used, is because not that it wasn't valuable. In fact, we've had 5,000 years of the masculine model of wholeness, wave, these different waves that have gone through culture and consciousness, and they've all moved us forward, could say. I mean, that's true. So I absolutely don't make them wrong. And in fact, I think it's one of the distinctions where, well, I don't want to go back to a matriarchy. And I'm not trying to go back, and I'm not making the masculine wrong in our work. And that's a big thing, because very often that is the case. You know, there's something wrong with men out there, or with this part of our own masculine nature. And I don't see that. It's just that in isolation, those ways of being and acting are not sufficient for the problems we have right now, the complexity of the world the way it is. And so it becomes like anything that's just overused. I think it can become toxic.
I appreciate you saying that, because I think there is a lot of criticism. That phrase toxic masculinity has a different way that it's used in the media than the way you're talking about it. And I wonder if you could say more about what you think some of the qualities of the shadow masculine are. I'm thinking of, like, I like hyper masculine as well, because one of my teachers, Sanyal Bonda, describes this kind of split between matter and spirit, and then there's this kind of bias towards transcendence, which we kind of named, you named that earlier. And I think that's something I see changing around the world, especially in spiritual circles. And for me, it's a massive relief. Something in me is just like, no, the world is beautiful, and embodied awakened states are important, and even the relative human experience is just sacred, in of itself, So I'm wondering if you could say more about what you think some of the shadow masculine qualities are.
Yes, and then I would like to give a little bit of the feminine and the masculine together,
Yeah,
because
brilliant.
that's I think what really that I think was also really helpful for coaches to really understand. I have a lot of coaches who come into my work, and but I think this will be helpful for coaches, a lot of your audience who are holding space for others. Because it's a kind of way of listening for what's happening when you can, based on what people are saying. So, what we began to see was that the feminine and masculine, first of all, had different expressions. You know, there was kind of the way it was, this was in the early 2000s, the feminine was thought of as more what I would now call the mother essence. You know, it would have been all loving, diffuse awareness, connected to the field. Open-hearted, and but we were seeing something else, which was still felt feminine, but was more dynamic, which we connect that to the maiden essence, to the energy of it's more of an awakening, a creatrix, a shake it up, wake it up, wild feminine. And it is feminine, but it got confused as being masculine very often. You know, that's how it would be seen, that women were being too much when they were in their wildness. And then the masculine, when we began to see that, okay, the feminine has this active and passive part to this. And part of the work with Robert Moore and Doug Gillette was starting to get a sense of work with archetypes, first of all. They work with king, warrior, magician, lover, and mostly their initial work was with men, although we talked a lot about what it is was for women as well. And I began to think, well, I don't know, there's something else happening here that doesn't quite map onto a grid like that. That's more of a flow back and forth. What then began to arise as a polarity between the feminine and the masculine. So that first essence of what I would call the static feminine, the mother essence, at the other end of that polarity is the more dynamic masculine, which we call the hero archetype. So that's that penetrating warrior in Robert Moore's work, the making things happen, the setting boundaries, and they co-rise. And that was huge for us to see, because you could have somebody showing up with the shadows of the hero, which show up as the active shadow, which is the dominator. I will, this is my thing, I have power over. Or you could have somebody in the passive shadow of that archetype, which is the capitulator. And either way, you're not accessing the healthy young essence. But you could do a lot of that work, but if you didn't do the work at the other end with the mother shadows, You really couldn't, well, women weren't able to take their stand, let's say, or bring their project into manifestation. And the other end, the shadows of the feminine, of the mother, that static feminine, the devourer, so that tendency to take it all in. I am the great mother, and everybody needs to be telling me everything and doing everything I say. And then the passive shadow, which is that part of us that the neglector. I don't really take care of myself. I don't really want to necessarily take care of you. So that's the first polarity. Does that give, that's the start. I want to give you a chance to weigh in here before I go to this, to the next masculine feminine polarity.
No, that's super helpful. Just in the sense of, you found that it's important to, if you don't include both sides of the polarity, then it's going to be limited, you know, in the sense there's no foundation or no dynamism to,
Yeah. So
yes,
this
yeah,
is for an example. Let's say somebody, and we have many examples of this, or a woman would have the experience where they would, and all of this connects, the work that we do is this deep shadow work, but it's targeted through these archetypes. That's the beauty of it. So let's say I'm in a meeting, and every time this powerful guy comes in the room, part of the team, I feel like I have to rise up and be, you know, queen of the whole room and take over the whole room. I know I'm watching myself do that. I don't want to do it because it pushes him away, but I feel like if I don't do it, something bad will happen. And you know, when the work is done, and they can recognize, let's say initially, oh, that's the dominator. That was a strategy I used. It was a very good strategy when I was young, and I had a domineering father who was abusive, and we call this the adaptive strategy. Well, good thing I learned how to do that. That was this wise little being. Well, I could know that, but if I haven't then done, and this is what was part of the research, we'd say, okay, well, so here are some ways you might approach talking to them next and whatever, as we were learning this. Then we realized, oh, but if they haven't landed on the ground of their own being, this is the mother archetype, the sense of I am enough just as I am, well, then I don't have anything to rest into. I just have some new tool, let's say, behavioral maybe, to show up with that powerful other in a different way. But it's not coming naturally for me because I'm not resting into my own sufficiency. And then from that place, when I can do that, when I notice myself, first of all, going into this behavior, now I can rest back a little bit into into myself. Okay, you're all right. Let's self-soothe. That's my young part getting activated. I can take care of her, and then I can allow myself to have a different, then I might have a different option for how I speak or how I show up. Is that a
That's
good
really
help?
helpful. Yeah, beautiful. And how exquisite that that's what you started to track and map. So,
Yeah. And so then to go to the second polarity, because there's a this is the sequence, and this is a developmental sequence. We have seen this through culture, and then in how women develop from young girl all the way up to elderhood. So it is this begins with the mother, the hero, and then the father. And this was a big move for us because initially we saw in our work, we just thought it was this big glob of masculine, let's say, when women would be in their healthy masculine, or maybe not. And then we saw, started to see the static masculine, which is the father archetype, which is so different from that dynamic masculine of the hero. This was taking my sovereign seat, having my own, building the structures that I need. So you can only go so many times with just, you know, all your arrows flying everywhere if you don't actually build the house or build the organization or create the order. And the shadows there are because now we're into the can become the patriarchal structures. That's the father taken to the extreme. And the active shadow is the judge. You know, I will judge everything that isn't correct, isn't the way I think it should be, or the passive shadow of the outsider. Forget it. I'm out of here. I can't even play this game. and I'm not going to play this game. And so not taking either way our sovereign seat. And then the other end of that primary archetype, like with the mother, is the dynamic feminine, which is this maiden energy I mentioned. And it is the kind of, yeah, she's the shapeshifter of the breaking it up, willing to liberate systems. I've just learned how to create them in the father, liberate them in the maiden, the sexual, sensual, wild feminine. And so often, you know, many, many women have come into our work, as I mentioned, with that lighting up in them, like, I've got to get out of here in some way, out of all these structures I've built or that are out there in the world that are, you know, choking me. And they want to burn down the barn. And when the work is really done, and we learned this the hard way because initially we didn't know that we needed to go through the sequence and we'd go to the maiden too soon, which is a very fiery energy. And it actually can be re-traumatizing for someone to action sort of you know, channel all that energy. But when that's in healthy relationship, the shadow's there. We have the bohemian on one side of the maiden. So, you know, devil be damned, I'll do whatever I want. And then the other side is the Puritan. So I'll just lock it all down, lock all that energy down and keep it safe. I don't want to express it. But when that there's a flow between those two, it's amazing that I'm able to take my sovereign seat, build the systems, but I'm also willing to shake them up, to go with the flow, to let things unfold. And that sets the stage. But I'm going to take a breath here in a moment, but I want to get to the next, to the fifth essence, which is the key.
Well, I'll just keep a very brief comment. I can see how the having the shadow, the active and passive shadow is helping one fine tune, into the archetype. So you can start to see where the shadows are showing up and kind of embrace those and then be in the center, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right. Because we're, you know, it's the iceberg theory. Two-thirds of us is under the water. So we want to work. We use, you know, Otto Scharmer's beautiful U model that we've kind of we call the mysterial change process. But it is about what we talked about at the beginning, this need to go down and in. And the going down takes us into this, the unconscious realm, which is where we want to be. But how do you go there when the conscious mind doesn't want anything to do with it? So archetypes can be very helpful as a lens through which to compassionately see that, oh, that's where I put that part of this energy. That's where I put my sexual, sensual essence. I stored her over here. That's what I did. And that wasn't, as I've said already, a bad thing. That was a good move then, but it's insufficient now. I want access to that part of myself now. So how can I bring that back into relationship? And all of this must happen in the body. That's of course the U model, that it isn't just, you know, a lot of women that come into our work have been in many, many different kinds of programs and have never had it all land in the body before. Like, oh, now we're getting into the territory that the body, the heart, and the head are all opening to. So that sets the stage, those two polarities, Joel, for the sequence for what I would say is the archetype of our times. And that is, in essence, I call the crone, but we could think of it as the sage for men, or, you know, to be neutral. And the crone is the fifth essence. So you probably know from different systems that sort of sense of the synthesizer. And in my view, this is the archetype that's trying to come in culture right now. It is an essence that it, for the first time, can actually, so it is a yin essence, the three faces of the feminine, mother, maiden, crone. But it can hold the masculine and the feminine together. So it almost becomes like this aspect of ourselves when it gets installed, and that's what I feel is trying to happen. This is the operating system that's trying to come online now. And this essence, and I'm seeing it come in young women. I just finished a program this week called the Crone's cauldron. And there are young women in it. I mean, the youngest was in her early 30s up to women in their 80s. This is an essence that's trying to come in now, regardless of age. It isn't just an elderly archetype. It is a level of consciousness. And when that arises, there's the ability to be with the mystery in a way we've not been able to be before. Like really, as we said, to rest into the darkness as not a thing we just have to survive and get through, but as a dynamic field we are co-creating with, to be able to transform things to a high order, know how to create alchemy. And it's a beautiful thing when that essence starts to come in now. It's tried before, been burnt at the stake, and this is the time I feel that for this archetype to constellate.
That's beautifully spoken. I'm really struck by how I'm seeing in certain communities as well. Like Peter Lindbergh wrote about, and I wanted to check it out because I've forgotten what he called it, but the sage basically, and he had a preface to the word sage, but the thing he was writing about was this kind of move where, in a sense, you have people who've been wise, but maybe not very agentic, So kind of people in spiritual communities who had wisdom, but not very much power, really. And then you've had people who've had a lot of power, and not being very wise, to be honest. And that they've been quite dominant in the world because they've got a lot of power and agency. But how now there's a move where though both those are being combined.
Well, that
And
is what I'm talking about, exactly.
yeah, so and the reason why I bring it up is because when he wrote about that, it went viral. Yeah, it touched, it sparked a fascination. Like it touched people because I think it's part of what you're talking about. That it's of our time. That so that's I wanted to share that because of that.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yes, because that is the. This is again just speaking to an evolutionary imperative. Like we need these yin and yang to dance together. So we actually, it isn't, it can't be the polarizing anymore. But the wisdom of the crone or the sage is knowing where to be in that map. So, for example, for me, coming through the dissolution of everything in my life, it was. All right, so what is called for now in this situation? Is it that there's certain things I have to do? Do I need to be in hero mode? Yes, I do. I've got to be in that mode. That is what I need to do. I need to get up in the morning and get these things done. But I also know the other end of that, I have to nourish. In other words, I have to be able to be with my loved ones and meditate and be in a bath every night, and I'm going to need the yin nourishment to do this, so or where's the time when now is your time to take a stand? This is the sovereign father. You must take a stand now and show up. And another time you're skiing and that's not what I'm doing. I'm not saving the world right now. I'm going down a mountain and having fun doing that. And knowing how to work with these energies, like they're all so beautiful. And in our work, we cultivate, we do the work with the shadows. So we're clearing the shadows in a very specific process we've created, and then building the capacities of each of those archetypes. And the very end of the whole journey is in a sacred ritual, which is a marriage, a sacred intermarriage. What Jung used to call the sacred conjunctio, like this joining of yin and yang inside ourselves. And in our we have our long kind of depth program is 15 months, and we end with an in-person, and it's global with women all over the world, but we end in an in-person retreat, and we have this beautiful inner marriage, sacred marriage ritual that we do that is really allowing all these forces at a unconscious way, which is what ritual can do. To integrate, because we do need all of these parts of ourselves right now.
I want to ask you about the process you have in a moment, but could you say a bit more about the crone in a way, the synthesizing, what that's like to be in that place. In a sense, I'm hearing you say you're not getting caught in one archetype. You're kind of more attuned to what kind of energy might be needed in one moment or one phase of your life. But could you say a bit more in a sense about what capacities, what it's like to be in the crone?
Well, when it's interesting, when the work, when we first started the work and we were just figuring this out and we were kind of invoking this energy, it was almost comic in a way because we had such little contact with what is the crone? Is she, do we wear a black cape? What is that energy? It was like, I don't know, there's something mystical here. We knew, but we didn't have the ways to understand it. And as I said, I feel this archetype's been trying to come in, has made its way in different waves. Now I feel it will come fully in. And every time in our programs we get to that, when you've done the clearing of all of the essences that lead up to it, there's a potency that lands. It's almost like this a fierce compassion capacity to take one's seat, to really be in this human life, to be in this life. And as one who spent quite a few years, probably I would say in a spiritual bypass, that move, what happened in Bali for me was like, way not so fast. Let's try this other route. And I would say the crone is this beautiful capacity that lets us really be in this world in an unfolding. The liberating belief, as we say for the crone, is I am an evolving source of wisdom, love, and power. Evolving, like we see ourselves as a movement, not just a particle. Like we're really moving and changing, and we're moving and changing all the time. So there's something incredibly dynamic about it. And I do feel that it equips us to be in these times because we're not afraid of the dark. We're willing to let things go that have to be released, but we're also willing to take the stance we have to take and the actions we have to take. But the crone knows when to do those. Like there's a timing, a discernment about no, for now, this is not the right moment. Let's wait until the factor is ripe, and then maybe I take the stand or I bring the sword. So it's a really beautiful. Someone who was just in my program, and this young woman was so relieved to know that this force she was feeling in herself wasn't like evil almost, because there are ways of seeing and knowing and I would say more access to the many dimensions of experience that become possible, I think, that are waiting. These are just capacities waiting to be cultivated. And then actually that's why when we did the work, we thought it ended with the crone, but then women started to show up with these multidimensional knowing, and they could embrace paradox in a way they couldn't, and they could tend the field, and they knew how to unfold the emergent, and they had all these capacities that didn't feel like they were just crone. And that's where the word mysterial came from, because we were looking for a word, and one day this just dropped in through me. We had before said, oh, these are full presence leaders or integral leaders or but it wasn't evocative enough because it's sort of like this is a new, like a new species. This is our for men and for women right now. I feel that we're really giving birth to something new, and so it sort of made sense that maybe there's a different word to describe that.
It's a beautiful word, and I'm glad you said that about, 'cause I feel very drawn to this, and I see in my friends and communities around me a similar movement where, there's a kind of, maybe this is one of the shadow masculine kind of residues of like overemphasis on rationality and analysis, breaking things down into parts. And I, not to make that wrong, like rationality has this very important place, but that if that's all there is, there's, it's a thinner bandwidth of experience. So this movement into embodiment and in immanence and a sense of like unfolding, as you name that, it's like I've shared this story a few times on the podcast, but when we got into Ken Wilber's work, at first we were like, it was incredible, and it helped me transition through a very dark place, actually, an existential breakdown. But then it was like, hang on a minute, I'm just like filling myself with more and more theories and maps, like, and we all kind of got drawn to practices that were about being in unfolding presence, where the practice was all about being in the aliveness of the moment, attuned, embodied. Scary because you were on the edge of experience as it was unfolding and emerging, but incredible aliveness came in and capacities came in that were sometimes. These were collective spaces, as you named at the start as well. There's like somehow you just couldn't do that stuff alone, I mean, not it's kind of obvious when you. So, yeah, and I'm just going to say a few more things because what you're saying sparks a lot in me, and then I'll hear, like, I see this in the field of coaching too, that, in a sense, like this notion of like closing the gap, of like, I'm going to go from here to there. And I know this linear path, and through will, it like that's also, at least in our communities and trainings, what we're seeing is people, and I, we've been a big advocate for this, that it's actually about being where we are so fully that our experience unfolds, and it's about including our shadow and trauma. So this kind of therapy coaching distinction starts to feel very kind of inadequate, we're playing around with like the different terms, like the transformational practitioner, and which is very unsexy, but what so yeah, this all for me feels kind of in resonance with what you're saying about the mysterious woman and the mysterious way and mysterious leadership.
Well, yeah, and what I would say is just exactly what you said, that this mysterial essence, which is, by the way, the hybrid of two words, mystery, the ability to be with the mystery, and medial, which was a word of Toni Wolff's, who was Carl Jung's kind of creative partner, that she used for the feminine psyche to describe this ability to bridge between conscious and unconscious and find the middle way. So anyway, that's the hybrid of that word. But what we would say, that true nature or essence is there. It is not something we have to go and find or invent or whatever. It's right. It's who we are, and the work we do is, and I think the work you do, as you're describing, is can we turn toward and be with those parts of us that are kind of blocking the flow. And that's not everything all at once. That'll present itself. The archetypes give us a chance to do that in a bit of a systemic way, and in a focused way. So we can kind of go in gently, turn toward and be with that part, and watch what happens, because there's just a natural ripening. The moment you stop running from it, the moment you don't make it wrong anymore, to use that example I gave before with the woman in the boardroom, to make it wrong that you have this little rush of, I got to step up and be more powerful than this person. It's like, oh, I can now notice that. And what's the part of me that's actually asking for some attention? So like there's a larger perspective, I guess you can say, that is, I think, less behavioral. But new behavioral options arise, because it's more actually the being with, the turning toward, the integrating, the metabolizing. We talk about it sometimes as the metabolizing of the pain body that was rightly part of that earlier trauma pattern that you couldn't integrate. Of course you couldn't. Your nervous system was too much, so you put that little part of yourself over here, that part of you that could just sit with that, be your own powerful self and be with that other powerful other. Now we can say, oh hi, let's come back here. And this is why we start with the mother, because that is that ability or that capacity for the to mother ourselves, to be able to hold these parts of ourselves in compassion.
So in a way, you're talking about a question I had here, which was the process for clearing shadow. And so, the archetypes are, well, there are many things, but one thing they are is a way to contact, the parts of you that are not in awareness. And so, yeah, I'm hearing you say that you're actually inviting people, the women in your programs, to then, yeah, to kind of just meet what was, these maybe younger parts, or the meet the pain that was that's been there, and it's about embracing it and meeting it, and then there's a kind of unfolding or an
Well,
integration that
there are
occurs.
some, yeah, and I would say 2% at a time. So there's a kind of tincture metabolizing, but the first thing is developing the observer self. So, learning how to do that, just having enough awareness and free awareness to be able to notice what gets activated and not be the activation. So that's the first piece, and that takes a while to get that established. Some people come into our work with that highly cultivated, and we use instruments like the Enneagram, and I don't know if you're familiar with human design. So there are different, let's say, assessment or ways of seeing that help us compassionately notice where shadow might be or ego defenses might be, and then what is true essence. So that can be helpful. And then we have developed a process called deep practice, which is sort of a hybrid of things that I would say I learned from some of the Enneagram practices and meditation and Byron Katie. And it's a technique, a meditative practice for actually just being with the sensate experience of the pain body when it gets activated in a circumstance. So that is like, they want to run a marathon, they got to do the practice. So that's a practice that women do. And archetype by archetype, we work with different limiting beliefs and liberating beliefs. We found connected to each of the archetypes was a very an embodied, for the mother, for example, I am not enough. Like that was head, heart, hara. Like that just lives in there. And then for the hero, it's I have to do to be of value. So how's that operating? And then the father, we have the one for each of the archetypes.
Yeah, I can see why you get a lot of coaches coming to you, because it's a very powerful kind of alchemy, a map that creates this alchemy.
Right. Well, I think it's a map that then can be used. I know, many coaches can have the own that they want their own container too for development. And there's a rigor to this that has come through the years of our research and all the models and this the assess the instruments that we use and so on, and that it's very embodied. But then also it becomes a great embodied tool for when coaching. Like I can hear when I'm coaching somebody, even before they do my mysterial assessment, where I can get a sense of the archetypes. I can go, oh wow, I can so hear the father wound there. That's where I know we're going to be working. But I also know, so I can be nourishing that father wound, and I know we have to go, we got to make sure there's a base with the mother. We have to do the first polarity, like the sequence has its own wisdom.
Yeah. What's your sense of the invitation being made to us as practitioners in these times? You're someone who's been, who's got so much experience guiding individuals and groups. And do you feel like it's pretty much the same invitation that's being been made to us, as practitioners for many decades, it's just we're going to go deeper into it. Or do you feel that there are like there's, something new in our times that feels distinct, about when you were coaching or guiding in the 90s or 2000s?
Well, I do think this is, and maybe this is where we started too. These are initiatory times. So I do sense as coaches, we have to, some of us, and this won't be everyone, we're on the, some of us are going to be on the edge of evolution. Not everyone needs to do this, but I would say some are going to be called to be the alchemists. In other words, I'm noticing a lot of people in this space that I'm in are going through their own dissolution processes in one way or another. And like, okay, what if that's part of our, this is our work right now, is to be able to let things in our own personal experiences dissolve. Keep letting go. We are growing something new here. We are, I think, as the guides or the space holders, needing to hold wider spaces now and more mysterious. I want to say more mystery, more of the mystery. So not know everything, not know even where your client needs to go, where you know that they found their way to you. And I was just starting with a new client yesterday, and I found myself saying almost exactly this, like, we know why you came here. You know what you don't know. Here's why you think you came. But it's what you don't know that you don't know that's really going to be our exploration. And I don't know that either. But I know how to create the environment that's alchemical for that to percolate. So, yeah, that's probably what I'd say.
I mean, I can relate to it that, in my own life, the last sort of 12 months has felt like a, maybe it's even kind of quickened in the last 6 months, just a, I don't put words to it really, but like just like some of the structures that felt part of who I was, on a fundamental level, just becoming much looser or falling away. And it can be a very, of course, like discombobulating experience. And but at the same time, that sense of space. And the challenge I have, and I think probably we all have in that is, there's a certain momentum to your life. And then, maybe you've kind of fallen out of sync with that momentum or the structures around your life. And so how can you make changes so that then your outer structures are lining up again with that inner shift? And I think that's collectively what we're going through. So yeah, we need each other. That's my sense
Yeah,
for
we do
this.
need each other. And I think to be the evolutionary co-creators, like out on the edge. And I grew up in a very rational household, scientific university president father, rational thought. I cultivated that. I admired that. I had that, that you know what you're doing and you stay on that path and you go forward and that was a training and I'm grateful for some of that training. But what's being asked for now is something so different. It's like that we cannot see, well, I certainly cannot see what's going to unfold here, but I do know how to be a change, like a catalytic factor in the unfolding for the best possible outcome. Like that I can do, but I have to let go of my life. And of course, this was my training when David died. Like I had a whole life path that was all of a sudden like an iceberg just cleaved away. Like I'm on the edge of there's nothing. And I had to learn how to trust, like one step at a time. You can hold an image of, there's something out there. There's a beautiful image of the future of love and connection to this beautiful planet and the flowering of culture and consciousness and all of that. And then there's, what's this next step I have to take right now? What's this? What's the one lily pad to sort of dynamic steering, as Holacracy talks about it, you know, where we really get more and more into the now, like, and working with our clients, I find that, like, you know, they'll come in with multiple issues because usually it's all arising at one time, and being able to find, like, where's the heat really here? Is it really that I have to leave my husband? Is it really the job? Or what else is, where else, where is the heat that I would need to tend to here, that of course manifests, you know, the discomfort manifests in the outer world, but that's our work. Yeah.
I'm with you there. And I feel like this is a good place to bring our conversation to a close. And actually, just love to ask where people can find out more about your work.
Yeah. Thank you, Joel. And thank you for this conversation. I always love to see what arises in a cauldron like this with such great questions and listening. Mysterialwoman.com, and mysterial is spelled MYSTERIAL, woman.com. That's my website, and you'll see, yeah, all the different programs we have running, and also the link to the two books. The first book, The Way of the Mysterial Woman, Upgrading How You Live, Love, and Lead. And that lays out the research, basically. And also a lot of practices for ways to work with each of the archetypes. So it's a great, it's just amazing. My publisher keeps saying, this book is like, it just keeps going. Well, it's almost like there's a true code to this that isn't time sensitive, so it's still relevant. And then the new book, You Make Your Path by Walking, a transformational field guide through trauma and loss. So those are good places to start. And then I'm going to do a master class, and for your audience this might be interesting, on the mysterial sequence in coaching. Basically, how do you go from shadow to sovereignty using this archetypal pathway, just so that the map can get out a little bit more widely to those who are holding space for others. So they could, so people could find their way to the website and then, you know, sign up, and I'll let you know when that's going to happen.
Yeah, may that be may it go forth and be spread widely, because it's a really beautiful map and way. Like, I'm just really want to thank you, and really, yeah, just the depth of the rigor you brought through the research in the work as well, and then through taking people through this journey so many times. Like, it's you can really feel that in everything you're sharing. So thanks, Suzanne.
Thank you very much, Joel.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is, for me, the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this, and it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches. Because our times are calling for something deeper, we've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are, we're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.